Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the sixth episode in the Husky International series and a long interview with pro skier Jackie Peso. My name is Magnus Ormestad and this is the Swedish outdoor podcast Husky. Please try listening to the podcast using Acast to access extra pictures and links during the interview. Find out more about this episode and previous episodes at huskypodcast.com. The interview was recorded at Clarion Sign in Stockholm.
So Jackie Peso, is it Jackie or Jacqueline?
Officially it's Jacqueline, but I go by Jackie.
Okay. Yeah. How's life in Sweden?
It's good, adjusting to the winters. I think I've gotten used to summers by now and a little cooler, although last summer it was pretty nice up in Åre, but daylight, or lack of daylight in the winters, that's a new challenge.
Yeah, so you're not like from the same
latitude?
Exactly.
Yeah. Nope. I think especially I just came from California, from Tahoe, and when there is daylight, it's pretty sunny and definitely there's shorter days in the winter, of course, but they're not this short.
Where is home to you?
I grew up in New England, so technically I was born in Boston, and my family has been living in Bethel, Maine area for the last, 20 years or so. So my family's still back there.
Where did you grow up?
Massachusetts for 12 years, Foxborough, so big American football town, and then Hanover, Bethel, Maine area. So there's a ski area there that I grew up skiing in.
What was your childhood like?
My childhood, lots of sports, I'd say. My dad was a professional football player, so he got me into biking and soccer, and we traveled a lot for skiing. We used to be weekend warriors originally, driving up from Massachusetts to Maine every weekend, and then I eventually convinced them to move up to Maine, to the mountains, so it's good.
But that's always been a big part of your life, the dreaming of the mountains.
Yeah, I think ever since I was little and my parents started taking me up there, I wanted to be there. I remember kind of like always being really sad when we had to go back to Massachusetts. I've always wanted to spend as much time as possible in the mountains.
But you, because I'm not that familiar with the cities in the U.S. But you've never lived in like a bigger city.
Spent some time. My sister lived in London for a couple of years, so I spent 3 months visiting her there.
Cities. And of course, now you've been into Åre.
Yes, the big city of Åre, which Åre is actually bigger than the town that I grew up
in high school.
The town that my parents live in now, that they've been in since I was in high school, I think it has a post office and an antique store.
The necessities.
That's it.
But like the relation to nature, has it always been important to you?
Yeah, I think so. It's my mother was a little bit interested when she, you know, had us. I think she started introducing us to it, but it's more been my own interest, I'd say. My dad, he was a sports person, so sports and athletics he introduced me to, but wanting to be out in the mountains and hiking and exploring and stuff, I'd say that's something that I stumbled upon, like, while being introduced to different sports and stuff.
When you were a kid, what did you want to become when you grew up?
When I was in eighth grade, so I think 12 or 13, we had a career day at my school, and I had said professional skier. So when I was younger, I said orthopedic surgeon. That changed.
Kind of related to skiing.
Yeah. Maybe fixing myself, but I decided, yeah, skier. Skier kind of that stayed through high school, and yeah.
Growing up, what was skiing to you?
So as a freestyle skier, I started competing in freestyle skiing when I was 9. And
that was like your, yeah, you know, nagging on your parents, please, 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 I want to.
No, they were pretty good. They, my sister was a racer. My sister's 10 years older. Okay. And I thought I wanted to race. And then my dad had some friends that their kids were on the freestyle team. They're like, oh, let's try this. And we tried it, my brother and I, and we both enjoyed it. And my parents have always been really supportive of sports and anything like that, so I didn't really have to nag. I was fortunate that they let me do it and competed in that for until I was 22, I think, almost.
And freestyle skiing, yeah, so like a 9-10 year old is like playing around, like in, like, is it jumps as well, or is it like the mogul skiing?
Yeah, so my specialty was moguls. I did do acro skiing, ballet.
Oh, yeah, you did ski ballet.
Yeah, for a second. The contests were on Fridays or Mondays usually, so that meant I got an extra day off of school. That was more the motivation for doing that. I was pretty bad at that, but I did moguls, upright aerials, and ballet skiing when I was younger.
Do they still, like, compete in that? Like in
ballet?
Yeah.
No. I think they stopped doing it when I was, before I finished high school. So I think they stopped doing it a while ago.
You were their last hope, and when you stopped, they were like, no, just.
not quite. I have to admit, it was kind of like my slacking time, so we didn't have a very big ballet team at my home mountain. Some of the other mountains, they were much more serious about it. Myself and the only other girl that really did it, we got to kind of go off on our own and practice, and to be honest, I was like following her and the older boys she attracted. I was like, ooh, let's hang out. So I was really bad at it.
How important has the like the social side of skiing, Binji? Doing it with your friends and competing with your friends.
I think it's been important, but like when I was younger, it was really only when I was doing ballet that I kind of slacked off. I was usually pretty focused, and I missed out on a lot because it's like an American, you know, we have prom or different things like that, and I didn't get to do it, which wasn't, it's not that big of a deal, but I was always competing or training, so of course the friends that I trained with, it was great having them around, but for me, focus was on the training.
Did you have like any specific like moment or anything when you kind of, like, epiphany or something, when you kind of realized how important skiing was to you? Or was it always, like, such a natural part of your life? Or did you have any, like, special moment or time of your life when you were like, wow, this is really it for me?
I feel like I had a few of those moments. When I was younger, I mean, I wanted to go to the Olympics and win a gold medal in mogul skiing, and I chased that dream for a bit, and it didn't quite happen the way I had hoped. But I think after I took a break from mogul skiing, I had a few years where I was a bit lost and I didn't really quite know. I tried park skiing, I tried a few different things, but I'd say it wasn't really until I was a little bit older, 26, 27, when I was like, no, I still want to keep skiing. And yeah.
But it always has been like kind of part of your identity.
Yeah. Yeah. I started when I was 4.
Yeah.
So from everything I can remember, it's kind of always gone back to skiing.
Did you have any setbacks, like injuries or anything because I know like freestyle skiing and especially mogul skiing is kind of tough on your knees and stuff.
Yeah.
So.
I had ankle injury, but it wasn't until later on in my mogul skiing career, and I took one season off from that just because I couldn't. I was running in the woods and twisted my ankle pretty bad. So no surgery or anything like that. But I had to take a season off, at least from competing the way I wanted to. And unfortunately, when I came back, I just didn't have the same passion for mogul skiing that I did before I left. So that would be my biggest setback.
What was it that made you kind of, I don't know if you grew tired of it, or because you were pretty, you were in the national team of some sort, weren't you?
Kind of, like the development team.
Okay.
So I went to Junior Worlds, and I went to Junior Worlds a couple of years, and I won the combined title for Junior Worlds when I was, I think, 18.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was doing pretty well in it. Like, I think I was second for dual moguls in the U.S. at one point, and eighth for singles. But I don't know. I knew that I had the ability, but my heart wasn't in it anymore. So it was kind of like, if I didn't have my heart in it, it wasn't going to happen. So it wasn't worth forcing it. Yeah.
But did you have any like specific plan that you followed, like from when you were, I don't know, 16, 17, when you were starting to get a bit older? Did you have like a certain plan, like I want to do this now for a couple of years and then I want to go on? And was the Olympics the plan?
Yeah. Yeah, the Olympics were the plan. So, in the U.S. we graduate from high school when we're around 18. And I went to college for 2 fall semesters, and then I was trying to do the mogul skiing, and financially it was quite a bit of a burden, and I think that was also one of the other hurdles, like the injury plus the fact that it was, you know, you don't get support, like it's not the same, like you're kind of paying for it out of your own pocket or with the help of your parents, so it was hard for my family to do it.
And you were working extra at the time.
Yeah, it was. I would coach skiing, and that was quite hard because I felt like I needed to focus on my own training. So, my dad was always telling me, "Oh, it's so good for you. You'll learn. You know, you'll start focusing on things." But unfortunately, at that time, I couldn't take that in. I just saw I'm wasting this time coaching other people to be good at something that I'm still trying to perfect. Looking back, it makes sense now, but then it was stressful and but yeah, coaching and, you know, summer jobs and stuff like that, and then school too.
When did you feel that you took like crucial steps for your development as a skier?
I think the steps came in different times. So like when I was in high school, I spent, you know, so many days working on technique and
doing the daffy.
Yeah, doing daffies and twisters and, you know, short swing turns day after day, you know, just run after run. That was, you know, I trained quite a bit. So I think there, that's where I gained my base and even my air awareness and stuff like that. And then again, when I moved out west, that was a whole new side of skiing. I didn't own powder skis until I was 27. just powder skis, powder skiing, slough management, all the new, how to jump off a cliff. I mean, my first big mountain contest was pretty much my first time jumping off of a cliff. So all those things were quite new, and that was, a new phase.
And that was your transition into, like, big mountain skiing, like, when you moved west?
Kind of. I moved west when I was about 24, 25, and I coached freestyle for the first couple of years, and I had a couple of years where I didn't really know. I thought that maybe I'd go back because I always wanted to get into mountaineering.
As a profession then, or is it just a passion?
I just wanted to do it.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand at that time how people were, you know, making money as professional athletes, at least in the ski industry. I didn't fully understand what it meant to be like a free ride professional skier. So I just knew that I wanted to explore the mountains, and mogul skiing was great, but you ski the same trail day after day, and you go to, you know, a different mountain in Italy, and you just go and you ski that one trail. So I wanted to get out and explore more. When I first moved to Tahoe, I didn't know that many people, and I was still in the mogul skiing scene, so I wanted to get out, and I had a few friends that I knew back east that could teach me some things, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll just stay in Maine, and some of my friends in Tahoe were like, no, just come back here for one more season, see how it is, and, yeah, got into free riding.
But because I was about to ask if the thrills and excitement, if that's important to you, but is it more like the curiosity, like to go out the groomers and explore the mountains? Is that a stronger like driving force than the like excitement and thrills and so on?
I think so. I don't know.
I don't know if you understand what.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. I think it's always changing. In the beginning, cliffs and stuff like that, that was new, and I just saw that people were doing it and that it was possible, and I thought I didn't see any reason why I couldn't do it, so I went and did it. And then exploring the mountains, the last couple years, I've gotten more into backcountry skiing and stuff like that, and so it's not new, but there's still so many areas that I can go and explore, so it's a new side of skiing that I want to get more into, and maybe even gaining more like technical ski mountaineering skills and stuff like that, because I always looked at mountains and thought, oh, it'd be cool to go to the top of that. So I feel like I have some limitations as far as my skill sets go, and I'd like to learn more so I can look at almost every mountain. Maybe not the crazy steep skiing type, or at least my idea of crazy steep skiing type stuff. But, I look at, Jeremy Jones and the type of stuff that he does, and I really look up to and admire what he's doing, and I'd like to get into similar style of skiing.
But are you doing that, on Jeremy Jones level maybe, but you do that kind of like expedition sometimes or what?
Yeah, a little bit. So I have done some, like I've spent, you know, a couple weeks up in Svalbard and camped out in a glacier in Alaska. So I have done some of it, but I want to do it more frequently. And I think definitely when I start transitioning out of contests and stuff like that, more expedition type stuff is kind of on my radar.
So that's like the major focal point and the major goal and the free ride world, because now you're in the free ride world tour, and that mm-hmm. it's kind of a means to an end?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of been struggling with some of the people that do it, like, they love competition, and I always thought, oh, you know, if I had a filming opportunity or something like that, I think I would do it. But I'm starting to realize that maybe there is a part of me that really likes competition. And I'm starting to accept that a bit more. So I am a competitor.
If it's been in your life since you were like 9 or something.
Yeah. Even younger, if you count all the sports that I've been involved in. So I think it is a big part of what I like to do. I just want to also check out some new parts of skiing.
But did the free ride, like the circus, like the free ride world tour, was that was something new to you then when you started like competing with it?
Yeah. So I mean, I got introduced to the free skiing, or what used to be known as the free skiing world tour, and I did a season of that, and it was great, and it was a great introduction. And I didn't really, I guess the Freeride World Tour is just kind of starting up, because that was back in 2008. It was my first full season of competition. And then I had heard a little bit about the Freeride World Tour, and I had asked about a wild card when they came to Squaw. It didn't go so well, but I did get one for the first stop. And I saw that some of my friends were doing it, and I was interested and I wanted to find out more about it. So it was something that I definitely pursued. And JT Holmes, a skier from Squaw, a friend of mine, he helped write me a recommendation to get me another wild card into the first Chamonix stop in 2010. And it's just kind of, there's been a few bumps in the road and a few more wild cards, but it was the best learning experience, I think, for my skiing. The U.S. events were good because it was a great place to learn, but the progression of my skills definitely was due to the Freeride World Tour in the mountains, and the way they, you know, visual inspection and stuff like that. That was all completely new, and I had a lot to learn, but and I still do. So
isn't that like super difficult though, like the inspection part and that kind of like remembering, like, okay, right after this cliff and so on, and like remembering everything, it's gotta be impossible.
Yeah, it's hard. I didn't really know the first time like exactly what I was doing, you know, and maybe I think in the beginning maybe I tried to pick out things that were too complicated for my level at that time when it came to visual inspection, and I had a lot of failure. I picked a lot of lines that didn't quite work, and then of course I had some that did. So and it's still, you know, it still happens, and I think what has kept me in is the fact that I've learned that it is okay to just stop sometimes and admit failure, admit defeat, and like, oh, okay, this isn't going to work, and instead of just trying to push through something and hurt myself, just...
The competitive part in you, you can control that part of you and say, it's okay, you can...
Yeah, I might not be very happy afterwards, and definitely sort of kicking myself, like, oh, why did you do that? But I try not to put myself in situations where I'm going to hurt myself, you know, incredibly bad. Of course, can't prevent it all, but...
But joining this competitions, did that add back to what you kind of lost, like, quotation marks, like lost, like when you kind of lost the passion from mogul skiing? Did you kind of rediscover skiing in some way? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, I think I... Because I did have a few years where I was skiing, but it wasn't quite the same, and I wasn't maybe skiing as much. And I think when I got into free riding, I found a new part of skiing that I really enjoyed, and I had a new passion for the sport, and things were interesting, exciting, and I like having a goal to work for instead of just going out there and making runs. I want to have something to accomplish, so for me it was helpful to have a new thing to work towards to keep keep me motivated.
What would you say, like, your style is writing?
My style, I'd say what I would like my style to be. I mean, I'm not super playful. I do have a trick background from freestyle, but I haven't really been doing much of that these days. I'd say bigger lines and, you know, trying to... I don't think I'm the fastest skier. It's never a race or anything like that, but I like big cliffs and I like things that are a bit more challenging. Not necessarily super technical lines, but fall line with big drops, I guess.
But that's your strength.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say so.
What's on the other hand? What's your weaknesses as a skier? What would you say is? What do you want to improve?
I don't know. I'm a little bit torn. I think there's a part of me that wishes that I didn't completely. Or I guess I haven't completely, but there's a part of me that wishes I had focused a little bit more in my freestyle background and worked on some of those skills. And I think if I really wanted to, I could get it back. I don't have the same desire to. And these days, I'd say acquiring more of the mountaineering skills. I suppose it's weakness because there's a lot that I need to learn. I just haven't done it, so... Yeah.
But are you good at challenging yourself?
I think so. Yeah. I think I'm good at challenging. I mean, I could challenge myself more. But then again, a lot of my friends tell me that I should take it easier sometimes. So I think, yes, challenging myself is not an issue that I have. It's, yeah.
Thought about, because you and Reina, you share one thing, because you grew up, like, before moving to Tahoe, you grew up, like, skiing on the East Coast,
mm-hmm.
and from what I've heard, it's not that always, like, perfect conditions, so you had your school in, like, crappy conditions.
Yes, icy. It's very icy moguls.
So you feel right at home at what else?
Yeah, I mean... I think flat light is something that's new for me because we didn't really have above tree line skiing and stuff like that. So when I go up to top of Ora and it's flat light out conditions, that's still a little, I don't have the Scandinavian eye. I get a little bit of vertigo. And but as far as the ice goes and the not so perfect snow conditions, I think that I had a lot of practice.
But from what I've heard from what I just understood from when I interviewed Reina, that's that can really be a good thing, like a good strength to have, especially on the tour.
Yeah. Yeah, it's different. The tour competing is different from filming. Of course, on the Free World Tour, you have the visual inspection, which is quite similar, but... you don't know if you're going to go first or last or, you know, until the bib draw. And you have no control over that. And you don't know, you know, maybe nobody else is going to go down that line before you go. Maybe everyone else is going to go. So you have to be able to ski in less than ideal conditions. And I think growing up in an area where you trained in less than ideal conditions, it definitely gives you an advantage.
Do you see any, like, differences between, this could be a bit difficult to say, but, like, differences, like, general differences between the riders, like, the European riders, the Scandinavian riders, and the US riders, and the American riders, the ones, like, competing on the tour, for instance, like, their background, because I know a lot of, like, the Swedish, like, almost every Swede now at the Freeride World Tour has come from a racing background in one way or another. Is it the same in the US, or is it...
You know, I'm not sure in the U.S. I think, I'm trying to think of, because I know there's some new U.S. riders, and I've spent so much time on the European tour these last couple of years that I feel like I know the Europeans better. I think in general, Most people have a racing background. I think Henrik Winstead, myself, and Julian Lopez were some of the few that have a freestyle background. And then you have a few that didn't have any competitive, you know, whether it's racing or freestyle. So I think an average, the majority are alpine. Yeah.
And another thing, because when I interviewed Kai Zackrisson, and he had this kind of theory that for many European skiers and snowboarders, they see racing or competing, like for instance in the Freeride World Tour, they see that as a ticket to become like a pro and getting sponsored. Mm-hmm. While in the US, in general, more people see like filming. That's a more likely ticket to become famous and become sponsored. Is it? Do you agree?
Oh yeah, yeah. I definitely think it's true. I don't know why it is that way. I mean, other than it seems like in Europe the focus seems to be more on competition, and in the U.S. for whatever reason that you know they have competitions over there, but you can be winning all of them and doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to make it as a professional skier or anything like that. I think that if I had stuck to the U.S. and stuck on the U.S. Circuit, that it wouldn't have done that much for my career. And for me, it's been definitely very helpful spending time over in Europe and, you know, having European sponsors and stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know why, but there's definitely more focus. I know, like, for Reina, he loves competition, and he, you know, of course would like to film, but his focus is primarily on competition. And for me, I think because, you know, I am an American athlete, there's a part that would like to film and be a little bit more well-known in that side of the industry, because that's what's much bigger in the U.S., so...
But have you done any segments in like films and so on?
A little bit. My first year being a free rider, I did a segment for a smaller company, Adventure Filmworks, which they have. Well, the main guy, Dwayne, he has a real job now. So I'd filmed with them, and that was a great opportunity. And then. Besides that, I did a segment in Warren Miller in 2012, I think it was. So those are the two filming. I'd like to do more, but yeah.
Is it difficult to get, from what I've heard, it's like you have to have the right sponsors, and you have to have sponsors willing to invest in movie projects. And it's kind of a big thing.
Yeah.
If you want to like do something serious, it's kind of difficult, kind of a long road sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it's expensive. I think, you know, for me, it's been good to have, there's always, you know, the competition, you know, if you do well, of course, you're going to get exposure, and sponsors love exposure and stuff like that. Whereas the filming, there's no guarantee that the location that you're going to, if the weather's going to be good or snow, or maybe you have these last couple seasons, especially in the U.S., it's been pretty rough. So I think filming is great because you get to express another side of, you know, your style and stuff like that, and work on projects that you have in mind. But competition has also been good because it's there. It's going to happen. And
it also seems like because you have the development of the movie scene, and that the bar raises like immensely, like for every season, like the projects get bigger and bigger, and they have to like there's a competition between the movie companies, and you have the sweet grass with a filming in the middle of the night thing, and like everyone is kind of outbidding the others, and it's so I can imagine that it's like the gap between the people doing like competitions and the gap between the people like starring in movies is probably going to increase, maybe, the gap.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's such a big, I think, what's hard for me is it's such a big investment. You can spend, you know, $30,000 trying to film with a company, but there's no guarantee that your footage is going to make it in necessarily. And if you don't produce, and of course you want to produce and that's your goal, but there's just so many different things that go into it that it feels like it's a bit of a gamble sometimes.
But kind of a dream for you would be to do the kind of a deeper, further, higher, like Jeremy Jones kind of film projects.
Yeah, I think so. I would definitely like to. I mean, as much as I would love to go heli skiing and stuff like that, I think there's something to be said about earning your turns and really, I don't know. I'd like to do that. And to me, it feels sometimes a bit silly to spend $30,000 on 2 weeks. it's a lot of money. I feel like it could go elsewhere. So yeah. I'd rather...
You get a lot of granola bars for $30,000.
Yeah.
You can just camp out and be happy.
Yes.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
And also a kind of a question that's difficult to avoid, like your relation to risks, because it is kind of a... The world that you're living in, it's kind of it can be a dangerous place.
Yeah. I think in the beginning, some of the things that I did, maybe it's because I didn't know better. And I was lucky enough to make it out unharmed, or, you know, maybe some minor injuries and stuff like that. And definitely as I get older and I'm in this sport a little bit more, I'm more aware of what's going on. And I think maybe I have a higher risk tolerance than, you know, your average person, but everything I do is try to take calculated risks, so I'm not just, you know, hurling myself off a cliff or something like that. I like to think that I have a fairly good idea of, you know, I think about what I want to do and how it would go right, but I also think about if for whatever reason something goes wrong, I also think about is this a situation that I can get out of without killing myself, or is it, you know, I can't. And then maybe I rethink, like, is that exactly what I want to do? Or so, I take a lot of risks, but I also think about it quite a bit too.
But you have been in some situations that turn out okay, but you have been in exposed positions, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of my scariest was in Verbier in 2012. Hit the second cliff, and then I just started tumbling, and I thought that I was tumbling in a safe area or somewhat safe area, then I realized that I was closer to these rocks, and I mean, I stopped, I think, 8 feet above a cliff band that if I kept going, it would not have been good. I potentially could have died because it just kind of kept going. And I don't like that feeling. I don't like scaring the people around, like having a better awareness of what's around me and where I am. So I definitely learned from that experience and try and avoid situations like that, especially in, I mean, it's not good to scare anyone. You don't want to scare the judges and, you know, your friends and stuff like that. And I did it again in Snowbird, but, it's going to happen, unfortunately. It's probably not the last scary experience that I've had, because that's the nature of almost everything I do in my life. But
incident, that was on Becteros, that was in the, while competing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've had, most of mine have been while competing. I mean, I have had scary experiences when I've been out on my own or, you know, just skiing for fun. But the more memorable ones have been while competing. Whether or not they, I mean, that one scared me, so I think that's what sticks with me more. I know last year at Snowbird, I scared everybody else. I did not scare myself, but...
Was it the cliff jump?
The rock.
Yeah.
And for me, I...
You ski down on one ski after that, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, it didn't hurt me at all. If anything, it hurt my ego, and I was more upset with myself for crashing or for whatever reason, sucking up that jump instead of popping. But I felt bad because, you know, my mom was watching online and the announcers were quiet, and all my friends, I think Christine Hargan came up to me and hugged me, and I was like, what? I didn't get it until I saw the footage. I'm like, oh, I can see how that would look bad. But yeah, so there's definitely a lot of risk in the sport, but...
Have you matured, or is it that you have been in, like, exposed positions because you didn't know better, or was it like, oh, I don't care?
Definitely not because I don't care, because I think I have, sometimes it might have been, I didn't realize that something was the way it was until I got in there, and that was, you know, a lot of the visual inspection and learning how to do that. So that was some experiences, and I think, I think what has, as far as my maturity goes, is how often I'm willing to do things. I'm not always going to go out when I'm free riding and take bigger risks just because I'm thinking about, well, I don't heal as quickly as I used to, and I have competition or maybe filming or whatever that I need to be healthy for. So I try and, you know, not always go out 100% because I would, it's just too much. I think my maturity is knowing how to walk away from something if I'm not feeling it.
But isn't that also part of kind of a necessary learning curve, that you have to do some mistakes, I guess, mm-hmm. and you have to kind of burn yourself sometimes in order to improve?
Is that
like walking a thin line? Is it part of the sport?
I mean, I think so. I think there's some things that hopefully you never do, and I've made mistakes and stuff like that, and I'm fortunate that I've walked away relatively unharmed. So I would never want to tell people, like, yeah, go out and make a bunch of mistakes, because that's
break
the only
leg,
way
you'll
learn. Yeah. I think, you know, I learn from my mistakes. I learn from my friends' mistakes. I try and learn from all experiences. I would rather people learn from my mistakes than them going out and doing them on their own. I don't mind sharing experiences that I've had and sharing knowledge, and hopefully, people have shared their experiences with me. And that is part of it. But if you can learn from others, that's probably the healthier way to do it.
And now in this kind of a new role for you, that as a backcountry freestyle, like free skier, mm-hmm. Mountaineer, have you set up like a curriculum or like a plan, like a education plan for yourself? Like, okay, I want to learn this and I want to improve in this area and I want to learn rope handling and I don't know what.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it, finding the time. You know, I've worked on my avalanche skills and I have like my ARI level 2 and I'm always working on expanding that knowledge. And also getting, you know, first aid education. I've had my wilderness first responder and stuff like that and have to go up and upgrade it and stuff like that. And I've definitely been talking to some friends that I know that have more ski mountaineering experience and like to go out and hopefully have them mentor me and thought about taking some rope skills. A few of my friends that they have similar interests, we've talked about going and taking rope skills courses and stuff like that. So I don't have anything actually set on the schedule just yet, but I'm hoping by the end of the season that I've, gained some more. I had at one point done glacier rescue and stuff like that. It's just I haven't used it in 10 years, so it's in the back of my brain somewhere, but it's not very fresh. So, I'm hoping this season, going down to the Alps and my friend Maria Persson, she's spending time in Le Grave this winter, so I'm hoping to spend some time with her there and learning more. Yeah.
Are you ever set back by like the last couple of months? There's been a couple of like tragic accidents within the like skiing community. A lot of like big personalities have passed away. And how does that affect you?
In terms
of those like mountaineering plans. And
I think, so with Liz and JP and Andreas, I wasn't very close to any of them, but I knew and respected all three of them, and I thought that they were definitely amazing people. It didn't make me want to stay out of the backcountry or anything like that. In a way, it made me want to explore more, but it also, I want to have the education. I want to do it properly. I don't want to just go and, unknowingly end up in situations. Of course, you're always assuming some risk when you're going out there, and no matter how safe you go about things, there's no way to know that you're going to be 100% okay. I think that I still want to get out there. Stuff that Andreas did was amazing, and I don't want to be on the level that he is. That's too much for me, and that's definitely too much. That's more risk than I'm willing to take on. The time that he spent in the mountains and the knowledge and skills that he had, I definitely admire that, and I'm not going to not do it. I just want to be as safe as possible, but knowing that, there is no guarantee, just have to try and make the best decisions I can. So it's hard. It definitely makes you think. I know with avalanches and stuff like that, I've been spending a lot of time like trying to help educate others and also trying to grow my knowledge. There are times when I go out and I get a lot more nervous and I have like a bit of a fight with myself. Like, am I being overly cautious? And I think I would rather be overly cautious than overly confident in situations. So it's tough, but trying to go about it in, the smartest way I can, but knowing that it's not possible to be 100% sure, unfortunately.
Being a girl in the ski industry, how is that?
It's interesting. I don't know. I think being a girl, there's a lot of opportunities, maybe not as many as there are for guys, and I think that there are a lot of amazing female skiers out there, and I wish that the world knew how many. I wish that all the amazing, extremely talented girls that are out there got more recognition than they do. It's a bit harder to get up there because as a girl, unfortunately, there's more focus on, not more, there's, yeah, appearance and stuff like that. So it's something that, you know, there's always a place for the ski models and stuff like that. And I think that you're never going to, you know, we are in the sport, we are trying to sell products and stuff like that. And you have to represent yourself in a certain way. And you have to be marketable, unfortunately. But I would really love to see more of the women that are really pushing, like progressing the sport in a positive way, and that are just amazing skiers. I'd love for them to get more recognition because there are a ton of great female skiers out there. They're just, not everybody knows about them.
And now, all of a sudden, or new for this season, is that you do five stops as well, like women and men. You do the same amount of stops, and that's a new thing for the tour.
Yeah. They originally announced that they were going to do an Alaska stop, which was males only, and I think they got a bit of slack about that, and which I think is rightfully so. Because I don't know how you make that decision, male only. You could do, I mean, skiers only or snowboarders only. I think it's a bit unfair to just pick the guys, especially since some of the ski females, at least, have been skiing bigger lines than the male snowboarders, so and similar lines to the male skiers. So I'm happy that they changed that and added... there's a cut for everyone. I don't remember what the percentage is, but there's, three stops, and then you have a cut for Alaska, and then there's another small cut before Verbier. So the women will get to go, the qualified women and men will get to go to all stops, and I think that that's a better way of doing it.
So now your plan is AK?
Yes.
But you've been skiing there before, right?
I have. And it's in Hames, and that's where I went. I've been to Hames and Alyeska, and it was not the best Alaska experience, to be honest, and I haven't been back since, and I would like to have a little redemption and have a more positive, because it was a quite sad experience when I was there. So, yeah, looking forward to going and having a...
Improving your memories.
Yes. Want a better feeling on Alaska. Yeah.
And about you, because when I read about you online in articles and like comments and everything, a phrase that's kind of follows you is like, yeah, Jackie, she skis like the men.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a positive comment, or is it kind of a problematic comment? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She goes big. She goes like the guys.
I don't know. Maybe it should bother me. It doesn't bother me because the reality is that right now the best skier in the world is probably a male. And ultimately, my goal, and it's probably not going to happen, but I want to be the best skier there is. It's possible, and or at least in the discipline that I'm competing in and skiing in. And that would be a male. I don't know who it is, but, you know, guys are pushing the sport and they're progressing a bit faster. And I think there's definitely been a few runs and things that females have done that I've said, wow, that's, you know, that's amazing, that's great. And I love to see it when girls do push it, but I'm never going to pick something because, oh, you know, this is good for a girl. I want to pick a line that's good for any person in the contest or filming and stuff like that. So that is the reality, is that there aren't that many girls that are hitting bigger cliffs or doing bigger lines, and there are more guys that are doing it. And so I guess, yeah, sometimes I am skiing like a guy. And until there is a girl that's skiing, you know, much better than all the guys, and I would rather have my skiing compared to one of the best guys than, you know, a girl. That being said, there are a couple amazing female big mountain skiers out there, and, you know, my friends, a lot of my friends are amazing big mountain skiers, female friends, and I wouldn't mind being compared to them either. It's just the guys right now, they're pushing it more than we are, so, yeah.
But do you see that as kind of a responsibility to be that... to be that girl who other girl, like female writers, can look up to? Do you think about that?
I don't really think about it. I just think about what I want to accomplish. I don't really look up to that many. I don't know. It doesn't matter if they're male or female. I just look at what someone is doing, and if they're doing something really amazing, I would, you know, I guess the competitive side is I would want to do it better than them eventually. I never want to be someone, but I want to be, you know, striving to be just as good, if not surpassing them. And I kind of hate talking about stuff like that, but that's, I think, you know, being a competitive person, that's the reality. Competitive people don't want to be as good as someone. They want to be better than the best. So I never really had, you know, role models or stuff like that. There's people that I respect that are doing things, and male or female. If I can inspire other girls to, you know, to do more and progress in athletics, then I think that that's great. But I'm not going out there trying to be a role model necessarily. I'm just doing what I want to do.
But are you, because I guess you are a role model to a lot of people. Like, do you have followers, or what you call it, like fans, fan base, followers on social media and stuff?
I don't know.
People mailing you or like commenting or anything?
I do get it's really embarrassing, actually. I got like the kindest comment from a kid that's on my team, and I didn't know what his background was, and I, you know, responded, and I was like, oh, you know, thank you so much, that's so kind. But it turned out that he was on like the U.S. national ski team as an alpine racer, and I was like, I'm so sorry. I mean, as a mobile skier, and I don't follow too closely to that sport. And I think that was really, I mean, what he said was so kind, no matter who he was. But him being, you know, one of the nation's and potentially the world's best skiers, that was huge. It was a huge compliment. I do get really kind letters and messages from people and stuff like that, and it means a lot, and it's definitely, you know, I'd love to help people out however I can, and if they want advice or you want to say anything, I don't mind. I think it's really... Yeah, it's really an honor to have people looking up to you in that way. It's just hard to think of it.
Because, I mean, aren't you, you're participating sometimes in, You've worked with Inspire Us, the Swedish,
for biking.
Yeah, for biking. yeah, you're like an instructor for downhill biking or something.
Yeah,
like girl only activities.
Yeah,
and is that fun? Is that inspiring?
It is. I mean, it's kind of a funny thing for me because growing up as a girl, I was usually the only girl in amongst a bunch of guys, and it didn't bother me one bit. But I know that's not the same for every female, and that for some it helps to have other females around to help and be in a supportive environment. So I think working with groups like Inspire Us and Safe As, the avalanche clinics that we do, it's really great to be a part of that and to be able to give back and not just, you know, worry about how many followers you get on Instagram and stuff like that, but actually, you know, use the position I have in the ski industry to do something positive. So I do enjoy. I'm hoping that'll be in order in, I think it's April, to help out with Inspire Us this year. So
they're a good crowd.
Yeah, they're really nice girls.
Do you ever think of the brand Jackie Paso?
Not really.
aren't you supposed to? I mean, not supposed to, but isn't that kind of a part of your life now, as a professional skier?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess I think that's something that I'm still
struggling with.
Yeah, like I'm just accepting the fact that I am a professional skier, and that I know some of my friends are a little bit better about grasping that you know. We are our own brand, and I think being, although maybe you can't tell from this interview, but generally, usually being more of a modest person and not, I have a hard time thinking of myself as a brand, even though I suppose that is the reality.
I think you've adapted too much to Sweden.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're American. You're supposed to be bragging about everything.
Yeah, so bad about that. I get it. My dad has Scandinavian roots, I suppose. Oh, yeah? Or, well, I don't know, Finnish, or I don't know.
Yeah, I was a good thing. Yeah, exactly. I've been thinking about that name. It sounds like Finnish.
Yeah. So he
he took the modesty from Scandinavia.
Yeah, he was a big athlete, but he never really. I get stories every 10 years. I find out more and more about his career, but yeah, it's hard. I don't know. For some people, it's hard to talk about, and I suppose for myself, it's hard to be like, I'm so rad.
What does your off season look like?
Lately, it's been mountain biking.
You've been competing in mountain bike as well?
Yeah.
Both cross-country and downhill?
I grew up doing cross-country, downhill, and dual slalom. I recently got back into downhill. I did a couple cross-country races, but I had a friend of mine that convinced me to do some World Cups. I don't really know how that happened, but it did. And I'm thinking about getting into enduro racing this next summer, so yeah.
The downhill, the trails and parks in Åre, they're pretty good, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're good. They're not. It'd be nice to have some bigger jumps and doubles and some more trickier terrain, but the cross-country trails and stuff like that, those are really good. And the downhill tracks, yeah, they're definitely some fun trails. I think, yeah, it's hard to cater everyone. So I want the little bit crazier trails. And then, of course, you know, the general public wants something maybe a bit mellower. So it's they're kind of meeting in the middle. So
you and Reina have to go out with tools and build your own jumps.
Yeah, Reina, he didn't like biking or downhill biking in the beginning. I kind of dragged him into it. I dragged him into mountain biking when he was in Tahoe. I said, this is what we're going to do. hopefully you like it, because this is what we're doing all summer. So that's how he got into biking. But yeah, I'm happy that he likes it.
And also, because you seem like kind of a all year round outdoor person. So is it is off season for you, or is it just adapting to the current time of the year? Is it just okay, now we go mountain biking and now we go skiing?
Yeah, I think it's more like that. When I was little, I had soccer in the fall, skiing, soccer in spring, and then mountain bike races. And I think we maybe had one free weekend, like, out of a whole year to just relax. Or if I got injured, I got to relax. That was the only time. And I go a little bit crazy if I have too much free time. So, yeah, I don't really have an off season, I guess. Maybe now it's like late fall, early spring, we're transitioning a bit, but yeah.
But is it good for you to get a break from skiing?
I do, yeah. I like having a bit of a break. I think I know some of my friends, they ski year round and they try and get it in, but I think it makes me appreciate skiing more to have a bit of a break. Like I get excited at the beginning of the season, like I did when I was little. I wouldn't mind going on some trips in the summer if projects come out.
Yeah, but you've been to South America skiing, yeah.
It's been a while though. Been to South America and been to New Zealand, but then I got into mountain biking, so it's been hard to. I'm equally as excited to go on a mountain bike trip as I am on a ski trip, so I guess that's good. So I have options.
How do you think other people would describe you? It's a kind of a job interview question.
Yeah. depends on who it is. I don't know. I think usually... that's tough.
You don't have to answer it if you don't want it.
I don't know.
What's the toughest part of your job?
Travel. Not really having a home base, I think.
Living out of a ski trunk.
Yeah. Ski trunk, suitcase. Yeah, I think that's the hardest. Because especially now, living in Sweden, having family in Maine, having a second family in California, and not really being in either place. I think travel is, it's amazing because you get to see all these different places, but it also gets, yeah. I haven't been in one place for 2 months in a very long time. So, yeah, it's good, but it can be hard.
Is it always positive to work with your passion?
Yeah, I think, well, as long as you keep having, as long as it stays fun. I mean, there's definitely parts of the industry that I don't particularly enjoy that much that does make it feel like a bit of a job, but, and that can be hard because you're taking something that you love that you don't want to make it feel like work, even though it is sometimes, it is work. We are trying to produce things, and it's not like I don't go out. You go out skiing, you're always thinking like, oh, I need to get like at least a good Instagram shot or something like that, which sometimes it takes the fun out of it because you want to just go and like you're a kid and just.
I don't
want to
hashtag this.
Yeah, so it does take a little bit of the fun out of it sometimes, but the reality is it's much better than the alternative. And I could be doing another job where, yeah, I suppose I could maybe make lots of money or something like that, but it's hard to beat the experiences, and how it is now, it's pretty good. So yeah.
This is the second job interview question. What are your goals in life?
My goals in life is to always have goals.
That's a good question. That's a good answer. That's a really good answer.
I want to have a bunch of huskies one day. I don't exactly know, 1 year, 5 year, 10 year, what's down the line, but I think I want to have more ski mountaineering skills. I want to eventually have maybe a guiding business or something like that, and I want to have a dog sled team and a house, and I don't know about the family stuff. We'll see. It could be like a bunch of dogs. So, I think just always having a goal and something to work forward. And I don't exactly. I used to be able to say like, oh, this is what I want to do, and I want to go to the Olympics and win a gold medal and do this. But I realize that things change, and you never know exactly where you're going to end up. But as long as you keep moving forward and you're doing what you love and achieving goals, and for the most part, it's not exactly how I planned, but it's pretty good, and I'm happy, and it's, as long as it keeps moving in that direction.
The journey is the reward.
Yes, exactly.
Where are you now in life?
Stockholm, Sweden. I am... I don't think I'm quite yet in a transition period, but I'm starting to think about what's next, and moved to Sweden, and it's exciting and it's challenging, and I don't know, it's kind of, having moved here makes some of my goals a little bit more difficult because I have to learn a new language and stuff.
How's
like that
going?
It's coming. I need to just be here for like 5 years and then maybe it'll be good. But I keep, I'm here for a month and a half and then I leave for three, and some people are really good with languages. I apparently struggle a little bit. So
it's not the easiest language to learn.
No, I'm so bad at pronouncing words. So bad. I can understand more than I can speak, but yeah, it definitely adds some new challenges to things that I want to accomplish. So I'm trying to figure out how to work, moving to a foreign country and learning new languages and stuff like that. I have to kind of adapt some of my goals, and trying to figure out what's realistic and what is realistic that I would be happy with. So that's where I'm at right now.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking your time.
Thank you.
And good luck for the coming season.
Thanks.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.